The Guardian.
Frohe Weihnachten and welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and arcing its way towards your ears, we have a full, robust wrap-up of events at the Leeds and Reading Festival, including chats with Block Party and Wild Beasts. Singles Club with new music from Fujiya Miyagi, Roots Maneuver and Matt Hilders, and Shelley and Orphan. Best of the blog and Facebook. And we'll have a new tender featurette where we reveal the musicians we're keen on outside of the day job. But first, it's TV on the radio. That's TV on the radio with Golden Age. We played that track on last week's Singles Club to unanimous praise, and so, when it turned out the band were in the country and ready for a chat, we thought it unwise to pass on the opportunity. So we put our top person on the case too, and that person could only be, well, it's Rosie Swash. Hello, Rosie.
Hello, Paul.
How are you? You've had a busy week, have you not?
I have indeed. I've been at Reading.
How was that?
Tiring. Fun. Loads of fun.
You did have an interesting, yay, revealing conversation about how you felt just a little bit older this time around to previous.
Yes, just by about 10 years.
Yeah, hanging around with 19-year-olds can do that, yes. I believe. Who did you see that you liked?
I saw Effed Up, as they're known in their native Toronto. And also, the couple of bands that went down really well were Folds and Crystal Castles. Uh-huh. People, children were going ape for these bands. So it was fun to watch them and see a different kind of
crowd. I saw that with Lethal Bizzle as well. It was just crazy. Totally over the top. Couldn't believe it. Right, very interesting. Let's move on from the festival now. And TV on the radio, our guest this week. Now, you went to see them.
Indeed, I did.
And they're just ahead of their rush release new album. A very interesting conversation ensued, and then let's have a listen.
I was quite taken with a quote, I think it was your quote, that said, "You're not a band with something to say, you're a band with something to ask." And I wanted to know how that related to the album title, this current album title, Dear Science, what that asks.
It came from a letter that I wrote to Science. I just kind of feel like, come on, guys, like just one moving sidewalk or just solve one problem or fix one disease. I swear to God, I don't need a smaller phone and we don't need a smaller MP3 player and we don't need more defense system shit. Like, enough, you friggin' brainiacs. If you have brains, try to connect them to your heart just for like a second. See what happens.
And the single that's streaming currently on your website, Golden Age, is this in keeping with the science theme? Are we in the Golden Age, or has the Golden Age yet to arrive?
If we're in the Golden Age and it's this, we better start striving for a platinum age. I don't know, man. We are not limited by current circumstances by any means. It's a matter of imagination, I suppose.
We're setting out to posit a utopic ideal within a pop song, which is a pretty safe place to do it. But we were just seeing what we could do musically with intentional positivity. Shit that's around us right now is stuff that was willed into being, like skyscrapers and atom bomb and breast cancer and all these things that, like, it came about because of people putting the energy into making it, even on, you know, the electric chair and the Hummer and all these things.
I felt like when I was listening to it yesterday, it's probably the most political you guys have ever been in an album, not in a particular track, but it's definitely your most political album. You can't seem to get away from the themes, you know, there's love and war is basically what I was hearing when I was listening to it. And that's a fair assessment.
I think that we're living love and war. I mean, and I think we'd make a very surreal fantasy band, you know, but it's like, I think that it doesn't feel like we have the luxury to just sing about like Fat Zorro taking on like an elephant army or something. But I think that with this record, it was kind of like, in our human experience, this desire to aspire to something higher than air conditioning or technology. The baby boomer generation, as they're called in the United States, really fucked up our chances at a lot of things and left us in a position of desperation. We are in the entertainment side of things. So for anyone to put it to us to be like, hey, what do you think the solution is? I'll be like, this is where my gripe with science comes, is that if I had a fucking brain that big and had the capacity to do that, you know, that's what I would be doing. And I think that we struggle with that all the time. I mean, you know, we talk about, like, you know, algae being processed into biodiesel oil and things like that, and trying to figure out a way, you know, to get involved in that. And I think that that's something that doesn't have to be, you know, public, the exact pursuits that we have in that regard. But, you know, reading about it and telling about it and opening the dialogue to include that, I think that when held up against a song like My Humps or, you know, what have you, it's like, well, at least we know that if there is Earth in 50 years from now, and they were to look back on, did art mention its time at all? Hopefully we'll be in that regard.
Don't you think maybe you guys are becoming quite big now? Does that worry you?
I don't see it that way. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't...
If I invited you to my apartment for dinner, you would see just how big we are.
Right, okay.
I recognize that there's been a growth from where we started to where we are now. But also has been... It seemed really fast at first, but, like, it's because we've lost track of time because we've been in the work. It's been gradual, and there's been a lot of, like, missteps and distractions. And
so, have you guys seen the film WALL-E? It's like the last robot on Earth. Humans live on another planet now, and his job is to compact the trash and scavenge through, and he's kind of constructs his own culture based on the things that he finds. If the world ended now and then he came and was doing that, what would be the benchmarks of popular culture now that he would put together?
In a couple thousand years of our lives, like, it, the only thing that would matter is if we found some way to stop the shit that we've broken and start going backwards in a smart way. I believe in what people call art is the closest thing to religion for me. Like, I believe in the process that we do as musicians. I believe in the search for truth through beauty. And I think that that's, like, some combination of art and science could scratch the itch that people are looking for. But I also feel like maybe even that is a big deception, and there's something that we're just missing.
I think that our role is to document what's going on around us. If our goal were entertainment as opposed to art, you would have to have gone through 8 or 9 people to get to us.
And that was an old one there, Staring at the Sun by TV on the Radio, and their new album, Dear Science, is out on September 23rd.
Thank you very much, Rosie. Sterling work there. You deserve a break, in fact. Good. Hope you enjoyed it. Busy show today, so let's move on with the Singles Club. Joining us this week is Mr. New Band of the Day himself, Paul Lester. You're writing yet more post-punk books. What happens eventually if you've written your book about the Gang of Four?
Did the one about the Gang of Four, and I'm just waiting for that to come out and the fallout, because they all hate each other's guts, and the drummer has accused the guitarist of all sorts, and I can't even begin to go into some of the accusations that have been flying. One of them described it as like a divorce, but about 10 times worse, and I've just come through a divorce, so I'm imagining that's got to be pretty horrific. So once that's done and dusted, I'm a bit worried because the drummer's pretty stocky.
Does he have your home address?
He has my home address.
Oh, he does. Interesting.
Hopefully it'll be right. And then I'm going to do one on a group called Wire.
How many books do you have to do before you get a doctorate in post-punk?
Yeah, 7.
7?
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. You're going to get there eventually.
Yeah, 2 a year. I should be there in about 3 years.
Now, you're aware that we've changed up the Singles Club format, and we're inviting our guests to bring in some new music they would recommend to others. So it's still new, but it's kind of coming from the heart. And I'm glad to hear that you have indeed been willing to comply with our diktat. And as compensation, I think we're going to let your choice go first. This is Shelley Ann Orphan and Melody of Birth.
I will love you, no matter even what you say or do.
That's Melody of Birth by Shelly-Ann Orphan. Hailing from Bournemouth, Shelly-Ann Orphan are the duo Caroline Crawley and Jamara Tale. They have been around for ages, releasing their first album in biblical times, with the first pressings cut on stone tablets for Moses, the era's biggest breakfast DJ, to play out. That's not true, but they did first sign for Rough Trade Records in 1984, and their new album, We Have Everything We Need, is their first in 16 whole years. So, Paul, tell us why you've shared Shelly-Ann Orphan with us today.
Well, they were hated at the time, so I thought it was a good idea to try and rehabilitate them critically. They were loathed and detested for being the epitome of everything that is mannered and whimsical and mimsy and fey and wilting about so-called student rock. But they had pre-Raphaelite long curly hair, and that was just the fella in the group. And so they were described as pre-Raphaelite pop. It was meant to be the ultimate in, you know, critical annihilations.
Were there any other pre-Raphaelite popites about?
There were absolutely none. There never have been. And it wasn't a trend that caught on in any way, shape or form. And they used oboes and bassoons and cellos and violins, and this was not really what people wanted in 1985.
So like bowls then?
A little bit like they invented foals.
Is this why they haven't got around to putting out a record for 16 years? Because they've been too embarrassed?
It's very possible. Actually, I interviewed them only last night, and I was expecting all manner of terrible tales of breakdowns and stuff. It turns out that one of them got involved in something called Watsu, which is a water-based shiatsu treatment, and he ended up massaging Johnny Depp 3 times, and he did Tom York in a spa, surrounded by all the members of Radiohead and REM, which was quite amusing. And that's just the fella. That is the fella in the group. The woman in the group, Caroline, she became involved in holistic therapy and went to the Himalayas in India, did all the things that people would have imagined that Shelly and Orphan would do once they released. Even more bizarrely, their third album, Humru, which was their last album, it came out in 1992, they were going to get, guess who, Barry White to produce.
You what?
That's extraordinary. Well, funnily enough, the last time I saw Shelly and Orphan, we were having a big conversation about how much we love Barry White. Lo and behold, the next thing that I hear, 16 years down the line, because I was 9 at the time, was that they wanted him to get old Bazza in to twiddle the knobs on their third album. It would have been, you know, how different would life have been now? We wouldn't be sitting here. We'd be wearing different clothes. Our hair would be different.
Maybe Barry would have taken up holistic practices and would have...
massaged Tom York.
Well, exactly. Or had extra longevity. He might still be around today.
He might still be with us today.
So can I just stop you with this kind of brief... It's your biographical traits are coming out here. You're just trying to give us their entire career. What I really want to know is... why you're bringing this particular song in today.
Well, I think it's a lovely piece of music from a group that have been undervalued, and I think that their rehabilitation should start now. And it did strike me, listening to that song from their latest album, the first since 92, that it doesn't sound that unlike other stuff that's being made today. In other words, an Englishman with a beautiful voice singing against a vaguely baroque, folkish, nicely ornamented backdrop. I do this new band of the day, every day, and not once, not twice, but several times I've been moved to use the phrase Shelly and Orphan-esque in describing said new artiste. Now, I'm not suggesting that these people heard Shelly and Orphan, but it just feels like the time is right. And actually, now that I say that, they were quite big at the time. They could have been even bigger. Jeff Travis signed them, and I think he saw them as the next in line after the Smiths, as the Smiths were slightly on the wane. I think this was around about 86, 87. When they finally signed, I think he saw them as potentially picking up some of those floating Smith voters, and actually they filled the gap between the Smiths and a group that he then subsequently went on to sign, the Sundays, who turned what the Shelly and Orphan did into slightly more bite-sized indie pop.
Rosie, what's your take on this? Do you hear much of this in contemporary music?
Yes, actually, that's what I was going to say. I was really surprised to find out that their original stuff was quite old, because this sounds, I think, Hayley Westenra and those kind of female singers that have lovely long hair with the highlights and in flowing robes and corsets, and they're sat at the piano, that I would never, ever want to listen to in a million years. And I so wanted to like this, especially after everything you just said, which is nearly as sad as the song itself. But it's just not for me. It doesn't... I think, actually, I find her voice quite adolescent, almost like this is the kind of girl you went to school with who would sing Les Miserables songs at you or something like that.
Perhaps people need to be checking out the entire album to get their full flavour of where they're going right now.
Indeed. The new album is out on October the 16th.
Okay, October the 16th, so you can buy it then, kids. But for now, that was Melody of Birth by Shelly-Ann Orphan, and it's on the album We Have Everything We Need. Second track on Singles Club is the Matt Helders remix of Again and Again by Roots Maneuver.
Dedication to them life and them causes. I did them tours, I settled those scores now. I'm back at the drawing board and I'm sketching out 2 plans with 2 crystal balls. I see the future where the culture looks corroded. New
dudes are chat, Mike, but them dudes are just posers. I don't know where the soul is, so I'm about to bring that back. Whether you chat rap or sing that back, you go.
Again and again and again, we come through.
That's Roots Maneuver with Again and Again, as remixed by Matt Helders. Helders is the drummer in the Arctic Monkeys, a band who had some success recently with every single thing they ever released. Roots Maneuver is one of the UK's foremost rappers, so most four, in fact, that he appeared on the pod 2 weeks ago. A remix is a record where someone takes a song, changes it, and then plays it out in the clubs for the kids who usually love it. Well, I brought this tune in today because I've been listening to it non-stop since I found it on the internet, but also because it's remixed by Matt Helders, who is, you know, mainly known for being a drummer in the Arctic Monkeys and indie band, and who here in this track for me displays a real aptitude for dub and electro and hip-hop. Really quirky, deep. It sounds very modern. It sounds even more modern to me than stuff like you hear from Toddler T and people on the bassline scene. What he's managed to bring to this tune, I think, Again and Again, is quite emblematic of the whole Roots Maneuver album, which I think is nice. It doesn't particularly grab you. It meanders quite a lot. And this has really put a lot of oomph into the track. And for me, puts Roots' vocals back where they belong, kind of on something of a pedestal. Rosie, you ever heard of Matt Helders' dance music hinterland before?
Well, he remixed Chicklet by We Are Scientists recently and actually made me like the song. So that was quite good. I mean, I agree with you about what you were saying about Roots Maneuver's vocals in this remix, is that you hear them a lot more because the kind of original gloopy reggae beat that you had behind it isn't there, and it does bring them to the forefront, and that's fantastic. And yeah, you're right, this is exactly what the rhythm section of one of the biggest bands in the country should be doing between albums. They should be messing around with all sorts of different things, creating really weird, bizarre sounds, being inspired by all different genres. And one of the things I really like about the Arctic Monkeys is that they all do different things and they don't spend all their time together, and they're all really different. If you see Matt Helders, he's always dressed completely differently from Alex Turner. You'd never know they were in the same band if you didn't know already. And this is kind of symptomatic of why I think they're so good at writing songs together, because they all bring something totally different to it.
Paul, are you hip to the game in terms of what's going on up north with your grime and your bass line and your donk?
I'm sure there was a bass line act that I did as New Band of the Day ages ago, and I was so embarrassed because no one was using the phrase. I think people thought I was going to making it up. and then, you know, I went round to everybody's house and said, see? It took me about, 3 years?
To go around everybody's house, every just put your head on the door, say, see? And leave again. Yeah.
And now here I am today. Unfortunately, not wearing my Roots Maneuver sweatshirt hoodie, which I've got.
You have.
And I've had for many, many years, and made me look very, very credible and ahead of the game. I think it's fascinating that the bloke from a trad indie band like the Arctic Monkeys has done what he's done to this track. And I'd love to know the extent to which he twiddled and did things, because I wasn't aware that he had the studio console knowledge that would be required to do anything radical to a piece of music like that. But it sounds as though he's done just the right things that need to be done. But what's amazing is that when the Arctic Monkeys get together, you've got Alex Turner, who's done this really, really credible side project,
a
latter-day Walker Brothers. Now Helders has done this. How can they contain themselves sufficiently to do the very straight and conventional trad indie rock guitar bass drums thing that they do when they get together? Maybe they get it out of their system sufficiently that they're able to focus on the job at hand. Can't imagine the Smiths breaking away and doing such radically different pieces of work on their own.
Okay, the Matt Helders remix of Again and Again by Roots Maneuver is on the single, which is for sale this week. Final track on Singles Club is Knickerbocker by Fujiya and Miyagi. Right, that's Fujiya Miyagi with Knickerbocker. These Brighton-based electronicos are named after a type of record player and an old man with an unusual approach to teaching karate. The group claim to have bonded over a common love for krautrock, the wrestler Kendo Nagasaki, and not being good enough to start for their football team. Their third album, Lightbulbs, is out next week, but they're probably best known for their track Collarbone, which featured in ads for both Jaguar and Miller Lite, which we shouldn't have to point out are two brands that should not be enjoyed together. Rosie,
yes.
Your selection.
Yes.
Tell us.
I'll start off by saying Collarbone, which is probably, if you know anything about them, the one that you know. is why I don't like them. It's right. too slow and funky and all that sort of stuff. In 2006, they had a single called Ankle Injuries, which is absolutely brilliant, and it's very, very similar to this one. It's got the same kind of trundling bass line, and it's got quite a sinister feel to it, and it's just fantastic from the first bars you hear it. And then the vocals are that very weird stream of consciousness clutter of images. Ankle Injuries was all about one of them finding a porn mag when he was younger and being really freaked out by it. And then the rest of it, and it's all these images like monkey bars, which you can imagine doing when you're a kid and da-da. And it's the same thing here. These are just random images that make you think of a very quintessentially English upbringing from a very particular period in time. Kind of nothing like the music they're making, which is why I think it works. And so I want them to listen to this, and I want them to keep making songs exactly like this and leave the slow, funky jams out of it.
I mean, I like the bass line, but I find the whole meter of it, the rhythm of it, really plodding. I didn't think that of the lyrics. I just thought there's not many words that are repeating. It's the ice cream types and then Lena Zavaroni, famous anorexic from the 80s. And I just thought it was just, they filled the line and that was all that was required of them, really. Mm. But Paul.
Well, I liked it. I don't know anything about this group, actually. I feel really deeply ashamed. Can't imagine them deviating from that. Once they've come up with that beat, how do they provide variations that aren't too similar to that? Are they all like that? You said that they do some slow songs.
No, they've been compared to like Devo meets Can meets Prince meets Aphex Twin and all that sort of stuff. And when they stick to this, I think that it works really well and it's quite irresistible to hear.
I have to say I'm delighted that I live in a time in which, you know, everything from krautrock to Prince is being assimilated into the music of young indie
But it also
groups.
Sounds like Kasabian and Athlete, though. But it does
sound
a bit like
that. Athlete.
Yeah, like kind of the bigger, more kind of anthemic Athlete tunes. It definitely does sound like that.
You're crazy.
pure outrage.
Pure outrage, yeah, I know. It's written all over my face. That is Knickerbocker by Fuji and Miyagi, and it's out now. Right, over to you lot and some of your feedback on last week's choices. Lucas J. Frieden III and Pierre-Joseph Proudhon said they like TV on the radio. Though with big names like that, I think we might have hoped for something a little more erudite, chaps. Ramolution posted the following. I enjoyed the track by the Beatabang guy, although it doesn't seem like it's radically any different from loads of other electro. Laura Barton's bloke was good. Don't like TV on the radio. Finally, Blunto offered us a tantalising insight into his inner life by revealing his tortured thoughts on Glass Vegas, who featured in the montage. Glass Vegas, are this band good? Are they absolutely awful? I keep flip-flopping on my opinion. So two comments. They are a poor man's editors, who in themselves are a poor man's Interpol, who were themselves a poor man's Joy Division. Therefore, they are totally broke. Or, the most important music to come out of Glasgow since Franz Ferdinand. The epic sound with true Scottish lyrics bringing more regional accents into popular music. One argument seems to be less heartfelt than the other there. But Rosie, you were shaking your head throughout all of that. You're more inclined to...
I love Glass Vegas. They sound like Joy Division in very, very small patches. I don't think they're influenced by Joy Division at all. And I think that they have come up with what makes true rock and roll bands really great. They're totally authentic and very distinctive sound. Their album's great, and I just think they're brilliant. They've got great live stage presence, but I don't hear Joy Division in it.
Well, if you want to help Rosie or Blunto out, please post at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music, where you can also offer up your reviews of Roots Maneuver, Shelly Ann Orphan and Fujia and Miyagi. You can also post your opinions on the tracks that are coming up in this week's montage. Mystery Jets, Half in Love with Elizabeth. Eloise and the Savoir Faire, Illusions, Hot Tonight. Don't let it get the best of you. Yeah, sure, it looks good. It's a big glass room. You saw it in a movie about an alien. You started to feel lonely. You started to feel lonely. Oh no! Dirty Pretty Things, Plastic Hearts. Portishead, We Carry On. Thanks to Paul Lester for coming in to join us for Singles Club today.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's Singles Club, but you can catch the texticular version every Wednesday at Guardian/Music. Next on Music Weekly, we're heading for Reading. Give me grace and dancing for
says it's a right to crave recognition. Second best. Right.
Okay, that's the sound of Block Party, who were playing the Reading Leeds Festival this weekend. One festival, two venues, everybody circled round like a big barn dance over the course of the weekend. Tim and Rosie went down to Reading. I went up to Leeds. Tim managed to catch Matt Tong from Block Party, meandering in between stages, no doubt. Now, obviously, they just released their album. They rush released it. They surprise released it. So while they had a little chat about the festival, they started off by discussing this novel tactic.
It was a small idea, which snowballed, I guess. Like, you know, that might sound like a slight cliche, but seriously, it was just one of these things where it was suggested, and then kind of someone else at Block Party HQ went, oh, yeah, actually, we can go with that. And then before we knew it, we were having, like, a proper meeting and actually talking about how we could do, a sneaky surprise release. I think, you know, after, obviously, Radiohead did it, we realised that, you know, if we wanted to try a similar kind of thing, like, we only really had one chance. And we had to do it as soon as possible. And also, I think it kind of came from the fact that we did want to get a record out this year. We felt the only way we could do that was by kind of skirting, like, sort of normal promotion, like, cycle and touring. The whole package which comes with, like, doing a record. We just wanted to kind of do something that was a bit more spontaneous, I guess.
So are there certain songs that you played tonight because you knew people would only have heard them for 2 days?
Well, we played Mercury, which is, like, it's the first single from that record, and it's been out for a couple of weeks now. And there's another song that we had been rehearsing, because we have a substitute bass player at the moment, because Gordon, our regular bass player, is having a baby. Well, has just had a baby.
How's that working out?
Good. We haven't met his daughter yet, but I'm really excited. I've seen some pictures, and she's very cute, and I can't wait to see how he's getting on. But he's going to be back with us in the next couple of weeks. But so it was kind of like not only to be able to rehearse most of our back catalogue with Daniel, our substitute, but then it was kind of the case of having to learn, like, the new album, which we haven't really played together at all. A lot of it was written in the studio. So
going back to the album, how many days in advance had you actually decided, right, we're going to do this?
By late April, early May, we'd definitely set a date for it.
Okay.
And it was just a case of sitting on this big secret until that point. But we've just come back from a tour in America, and we literally had the best time. We kind of went a bit nuts and decided to be less apologetic about being in a band and actually just, like, go for it.
I heard you were partying every night.
We might have been doing a bit of that. There were kind of a few festivals we did as well. We were in, like, Chicago for the whole Lollapalooza weekend, so there was a hell of a lot of stuff going on there, which I'm not sure if I should really talk about. I think we've basically just run ourselves down a little bit, so it's been hard to kind of comprehend what this week is actually will come to mean for us as a band. But it's been good, though. Like, it's been, you know, it's been fun. It's been nice breaking the mould a bit with regards to what we normally do.
Talking about Reading, what does the festival mean to you? How is it different to all the other festivals?
It always feels like full circle whenever we come back here, because Kelly and Russell met at this festival originally. It was the first UK festival we played. In fact, that was 2004. We went on, like, midday. We were, like, I think we were the second band on in the Radio 110. It doesn't seem like much now, but at the time it was a really, really big deal. And every time we've come back, we've managed to kind of be a little bit higher up on the bill. I'm not sure if we'll ever get to headline this properly, but
we're one away.
So close. I mean, you know, had the killer succumb to illness or, like, some freak injury, we would have been headlining this. So, you know,
I think some people might be a bit suspicious of who had caused the freak injury.
Yeah, the helicopter accident.
Tell me some Reading memories, any anecdotes you've got from previous shows.
I think the one that sticks out most is when we headlined the tent, and we had to stop after three songs because somebody climbed up the tent pole. It's like the main supporting structure of the tent. He got right to the top, and we were advised by the security to stop until he came down. So we had to sort of issue this plea to this completely messed up party goer. And then people started throwing bottles at him, and then I saw my mum came to the show, and she was actually standing underneath a pole, and she was like, oh, I got completely hit with bottles because people were, like, trying to get this guy down, and they were just falling on top of me.
So your mum got bottled off, basically.
My mum got bottled off.
Okay, that's Matt Tong, and that was the Reading Festival. More now from Fucked Up, Rosie's favourite Canadians, who you opted not to use the swear word.
Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't want to get a vicarious thrill from doing
that. That's what everyone in Canada calls them, effed up. They love Reading, and they also have a lot of love for fellow hardcore band Gallows.
It's weird when you play with a band a lot, because, like, Gallows, first time we played with them, they opened for us, and, you know, then we got them really popular. But then, like, you know, so I was never, like, a huge, huge fan until we went on tour. By the end of tour, I'm, like, a convert. So, yeah, like, it's kind of like this battle of one-upmanship. Like, we go on first, and then they're like, well, here, that was good, but we can top it. So I want to hear some of the new songs on the new record, and I want to jump on Kids again, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, you did that a little bit earlier. Did you feel it went well, the performance?
It was like a dream Reading experience, I think, for me. Kids crowd surfing me, like, so surreal, because in Canada, like, they show Reading on TV.
Oh,
like,
really?
Bits of it, yeah. So, like, it was so bizarre to, like, be in Reading and, like, living the Reading dream of, like, playing here live.
Today, that is quite a hardcore day, and it's still a mainstream festival. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, it's really surprising. But I think it's so weird, because in England, even like the worst band on the charts is still listenable, you know? And you can't say that about North American radio culture, you know? British Isles in general, like, everyone likes music, you know? And I find it a lot more open.
But it's like so much love for music here that everything is fair game, and like every kind of music can be represented at even at like the biggest festival in the country.
Nothing can prepare you for like the depths that humanity can sink to that you'll see at this festival. I just kind of want to take in like the experience, like people lying down in their own vomit, you know, shit like that. Like, you don't see that every day, you know. And like, I hopefully meet some funny people backstage that I can take my picture with.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
So that was FDOP. Or Octop. Either way, just as long as you don't swear, then you won't offend any Canadians. Right, final band we managed to catch up with at the fest was Wild Beasts. Now, they're from Kendal, and they now live in Leeds, and I caught them at Leeds, and we had a wonderful conversation about music, theatricality, and the bond between band and audience, only for the whole thing to be drowned out by the bass lines from Feeder. Fortunately, Tim Jones was diligent enough to catch them again when they moved down to Reading. And he asked them how they found playing a big festival.
So you've never played Reading or Leeds before. I mean, what are your first impressions of the festival?
It's a big-time festival. You've got Metallica's tour buses parked around the corner. And
the helicopter schedules on the walls and stuff. Is.
How long do you think it'll be before Wild Beasts get their own helicopter schedule?
Probably got one.
Yeah, the voice has got one. We just follow him around in the car. He flies to locations. So.
We've got this like Austin Montego. It's new. It's cool. E-Reg.
I just meet these guys at gigs. It mean nothing to me. I just sort of turn up and sing and go.
He's a pro.
So how did the gig go anyway? How was it in Leeds, first of all? How was Leeds?
Well, it was good, but we thought we were better today than we were in Leeds, if we're honest. But I mean, obviously people were the judge of that.
When you play festivals alongside people like Metallica and Rage and things, there's no point us even trying to compete on that sort of level. We can only just do our thing. No. And
it was nice though to see lots of people and people singing along as well. Like, people are slowly coming around to us, and the tent was really full, wasn't it? So it's awesome.
You have to cut your teeth, you know what I mean? It's like, well, this can we sing, can we play, have we got songs? And if not, you're fucked. But this is a whole different kettle of fish. This is like, you know,
serious. The people around, like Jack Black and stuff, it's just, you get great celebrity shouts here.
Right. Who else have you seen? What kind of celebrities have you bumped into?
I've not seen any Metallica, which I'm pretty disappointed about.
I saw James Hetfield.
I did it with James Hetfield, one table along from him.
That was, really?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
What was he eating?
Well, that might have been chicken.
Probably raw chicken.
Yeah, raw
chicken with blood sauce.
That is Wild Beasts, and interesting men they are too. Maybe we should have them on the pod properly sometime. Time for a bit more of your feedback now, and what was quite a titanic row about the meaning of the word indie. We started it all off by using the word indie to describe last week's guest, The Wave Pitchers, but this immediately got the goat of NJ16, who clearly hadn't listened to the pod, but wanted to pass on this comment.
Indie pop equals shit with a number one instead of the letter I. The worst genre right down there with gangster rap, country and western, R&B and anything connected with Damon Albarn.
That is the sort of considered remark that makes us proud to work on the internet. But it quickly started a debate on what indie means and whether it meant anything good or not. Hoodie Ledbetter offered interesting insight from a historical perspective. If memory still serves, this nonsense all started at the end of the 70s when music papers like Sounds and NME began publishing alternative or independent charts based on sales of records or independent labels and independent record shops. The snag was that though dominated by punk and reggae as intended, you would sometimes get some dodgy piece of Euro trash keeping up the list, so the criteria for entry was adjusted to exclude the unwanted while becoming more flexible in relation to a certain type of music. Someone else can embarrass themselves by trying to define it, which may not have been strictly speaking independent, e.g. groups releasing their tunes on big label subsidiaries. basically, indie became a style of music, certainly not merely a contraction of the word independent. Wet Behind the Ears drew everything to a close in the nicest possible way, however. Thanks for introducing me to the Wave Pictures with your single review a while back, he or she wrote. Their lyrics are so unique and off the wall, but they make me smile, although I don't understand everything. Which makes me think like it's an 11-year-old writing, but I don't mean to demean you if you are 45.
But we're just talking about hardcore bands from Canada.
In front of you. Cheers for the pod, they finish. I enjoy it weekly. Isn't that nice? Well, you can post comments on this week's blog. You can tell us what you made of our Reading bits and bobs and also TV on the radio. The address is blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Right. Now, before we go, we have a little extra element to bring to you. It's a new featurette where we try and kind of talk about bands that don't necessarily have any product out or aren't in the type of music that you won't try to describe, lest you embarrass yourself. I'm going to start it off by giving you a little bit about this bloke, Vieux Farcatore, who is the son of Ali Farcatore, and they are both very famous Malian artists. I first encountered the music of Vieux Farcatore last autumn in Johannesburg. He was playing to a terribly small crowd in a vast, drafty marquee while the rain poured down outside. I knew of the late Ali Farcatore, Vieux's father, but I wasn't quite aware of what he'd achieved, his fusion of traditional Malian guitar work and the rhythms of the blues, which he believed to be a relation of African music in the first place, changed many people's perception of world music. To see his son continue the family tradition with meticulous, dirty guitar work, backed by a frenetic band, was an experience so exciting I had to dance with my coat over my head. When I got home to Blighty, I found myself a copy of Vieux's eponymous debut album. While less clearly inspired by the blues than I had imagined from his live show, it was just as beguiling and much more tender. The duet with his father on Diallo is wonderful. His instrumental collaboration with Malian master of the kora Toumani Diabate, a fusion incorporating the phrasing of Western folk music into that heady mix. But my favourite track is the first, Sangare, which as well as a great groove has the sort of hypnotic effect you usually experience in dance music, which I guess is kind of what it is really. So check him out. Just don't buy the remix album. It's a bit crusty. Okay, that's a little bit about Vieux Farcatore, and we'll be trying to do one of these sorts of things each week. We'll all be taking it in turns. We don't have a name for it as yet. Maybe you might want to post one on the blog, although don't make it supercilious and snide because, you know, we're just going to discount it. Anyway, that is all for this week, however. Rosie, it's been great to be with you today. Your reviews were excellent today. I thought really insightful, really good.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks, man. And we'll be back next Friday, won't we, I guess, with more guests.
I won't.
You won't. Oh yeah, go in China.
Yeah,
you're going China.
Yeah.
Are you
gotta go. Park.
You got to go to some rock club.
I know. Haven't planned it. Anything yet.
We'll have a great time. I'll be back next week anyway, and we'll have some combination of guests, reviews, and chit chat. And we look forward to meeting you all in a virtual place then. Until then, see ya.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.